Good morning and welcome. We launched the Augsburger Lecture Series with this morning's chapel, and our emphasis for the series, this talk, and also 4 p.m. in Common Grounds today and 11 in the morning tomorrow at the chapel gathering at the seminary. The focus for all three of those times is embracing missional shalom community.
The Augsburger Lecture Series is supported by an endowment that was contributed by Dr. Myron and Esther Augsburger, and I believe they are not able to be here this morning, but there you are. Thank you. I had understood perhaps you were not here this morning, but would be later today. Myron Augsburger served as president of Eastern Mennonite College and Seminary from 1965 to 1980, and it is their generosity that provided the endowment to support this lecture series. It is to bring to campus each year a noted lecturer to address pertinent topics in the areas of Christian evangelism and mission, to stimulate all of us to think about evangelism and mission for the future of the church. It is my privilege this morning to introduce Dr. Randy Woodley. He's an author, a missiologist, an activist scholar, former pastor and innovator. For over 35 years, he spent in grassroots ministry, and he has founded or helped to form organizations such as Christians for Justice, Eagle Valley Church, Eagle's Wings Ministry, American Indian Environment and Health Association, North American Institute for Indigenous Theological Studies, Evangelicals for Justice, Alohe Village for Indigenous Leadership and Ministry Development, and Alohe Farm. And his most recent book is Shalom and the Community of Creation, an Indigenous Vision. Randy is a legal descendant of the United Kituwa Band of Cherokees, and he's been involved in Indigenous ministry for 28 years. Currently serves as Distinguished Professor of Faith and Culture and Director of Intercultural and Indigenous Studies and Program Director of a Master of Arts in Intercultural Studies at George Fox Seminary in Portland, Oregon. Please help me welcome Dr. Randy Woodley.
It's wonderful to be here today. This is the land of my ancestors. Both my white ancestors and my native ancestors. So my fifth great-grandfather was Daniel Harrison, out of Dayton, the Daniel Harrison House. His brother and he helped form this area. My fifth grandfather Woodley is buried at 10th Legion, Jacob Woodley, just north of here at his old farmstead. And then my Cherokee ancestors used to run up here and raid them all the time. So I'm a bit conflicted being here. I'm glad to be here. I feel very honored to be part of this lecture series. Dr. Augsburger, I heard you speak many years ago, what I remember walking away with was kind of a gentle giant. And people have called me that. Not when they first get to know me, though. I'm very glad to be here and represent the kind of thought that went into your life and work and this series and what you are all about here. Excuse me. Did anybody notice this morning the songbirds? Yeah, so they're very different sounding here than they are in the West. These are the ones that are sort of embedded in my soul, right? So that's the first thing I heard this morning, and I felt very welcomed. The second thing I noticed this morning is, as I was walking up the chapel here, on both sides, wildflowers are starting to bloom. And probably about the time Rachel Held Evans gets here, which would be appropriate, right? She's kind of a princess, nice, wonderful person. You can tell her I said that. I know her. So the wildflowers will greet her as we go. The way I come about this is I'm one of those folks that you probably read about. I was a meth addict back in the mid-70s. You didn't know we had meth addicts back then, did you? And I was miraculously brought to Christ and delivered. And when I was an angry person. I was in my context, because I was very much a mixed blood Cherokee. Both my parents are mixed bloods. Our community is mixed blood. But I wanted to get in the struggle of the real Indians and be a kind of an American Indian movement radical. And in the middle of sort of sorting through that stuff, I got hooked on drugs, and then I came to Jesus. And when I did, they told me, well, all that stuff from your past doesn't matter. Just be like us, right? And what was us? I was give my life to Christ in the midst of mostly white, middle to middle lower class folks. And so being like us meant, they told me, cut your hair, forget all that stuff, just follow Jesus. So that's what I did. And I decided if I was going to follow Jesus, I was going to be the best that I could be. And so I became what I would now call a flaming evangelist. So I learned all the four spiritual laws and even the Double E school and the Knox school of evangelism. And I was out on the streets and I was setting up programs, and I was, for 4 or 5 years, I was bringing people to Christ. Because, and just this abstract, come meet Jesus way. Because that's how the West does it. And I figured, if God didn't care about my context and who I was, then God doesn't care about anybody else's context. It's just the message, right? But the message is more than the message. So I have this belief that about mission, that God is good, God is fair. If that is true, then mission is important. If God offers God's goodness to everyone, then mission is important. And if God cares about context, then mission is important. So what is this context? All this time I was doing all the evangelism and everything, I kept reading in the book of Acts about a different kind of a community that acted differently than the church that I saw acted. And it kept bothering me. And so I began to research that and understand it. And as I came along and I started thinking more about my own tribal traditions, I found that our own tribal tradition has this very harmony, balanced way of looking at things that's very similar to what the Bible calls shalom, in the grand construct of shalom. And so I began to look at the two of those, and it led me to some interesting places. And I just want to share one story of one of those places with you today. So Luke is telling us this story. Who's the number one writer in the New Testament? Wrong. It's Luke. In Luke Acts, he writes more than Paul. So Luke, I pay attention to what Luke has to say. Luke tells us all these different stories, but what is Luke's background? What is Luke's context? When he's talking about Jesus, he's telling those stories in a particular context. Luke came to understand this whole Jewish construct of shalom, and in Acts we see that he understands it also at a Gentile perspective. Because in Acts 17, for example, that whole understanding of Jesus, the truth in all cultures, comes out. So what happens? The story is that Jesus is talking to the Pharisees, right? And he says to them, if you were a shepherd and you had 100 sheep, wouldn't you? Well, the first thing that happens is that's like a punch in the nose to the Pharisees, right? Because shepherds, even though God is my shepherd, is a wonderful idea in ancient Judaism, in the second century, in Second Temple Judaism, as Jerusalem develops, being a shepherd is not such a noble profession anymore. In fact, being a shepherd is a downright disgusting and one of the reasons is because people had to argue over land rights. And if you're developing cities, shepherds are in your way. And it also became a big profession for Gentiles. So most of your shepherds are not even Jews anymore, they're Gentiles. So what do? They say shepherds are one profession that cannot testify in a court of law. And so it puts them out, just like it put women out at that time. Which is interesting, because who are the first people that the birth of Christ is witness to? God thinks a little differently than humans do. So he says to the Pharisees, if you were a shepherd, and the Pharisees can't even imagine that. Then he goes to the next parable. And he says, if you were a woman, which is not really a noble thing to say to a Jewish man, a learned Jewish man, and then a widow, because we know that the person was a widow because the coin that she lost was a drachma. It was probably 1/10 of her dowry, which the only thing a widow would get to keep of her own at that day were 10 coins that she kept on a headband. She lost one of those. It was important. So the Pharisees, they can't imagine themselves as a woman or a widow either. And then he goes to the next story. And he talks about this son. And this son is disgusted with his home life. This son tells the father, and he's the second son. Now, in Jewish culture at that time, the first son receives 2/3 of the inheritance. The second son receives 1/3. The rest are on their own. So the second son asks for his inheritance, which basically is saying to the father, I wish you were dead. In fact, it was so terrible that the community had a way of looking at that, and anybody who did that, they would come and they would do a ceremony. If that son ever returned, they would take a pot and they would break it and say, this will happen to you if you stay. You're not welcome anymore. And so he made himself an orphan. But the story is also about two sons, right? So let's talk about what the context is that Luke is sharing in. Why is Jesus sharing this in this context? The background of Luke's stories is this whole idea of the kingdom, which I argue is a shalom kingdom. It's not something new that Jesus just thought up. It's something that Jesus understood as a Jew in his culture, in his context, that God had planned since the beginning. So shalom's this Garden of Eden. It's the idea from the beginning. That's the story from the beginning. It's the idea of the Sabbath. Resting, letting the land rest, leaving the edges of the field so the poor can harvest it. If you forget a bunch of wine and you're harvesting grapes, forget a bunch of grapes, leave those grapes. If you forget wheat, leave those, because poor people need to eat. And so it gives everybody something in society. It's this idea of the great day of Jubilee that Luke talks about in Luke chapter 4. And then Jesus says, hey, I'm here. It's the great day of the Lord, which provides a critique to society to love and to live differently. And since that time, the church has struggled to understand and fulfill its shalom mission. So I would say shalom is God's preferred state for all life and creation. Shalom is the culture of the Trinity. Shalom is the kingdom Jesus came preaching. The mission of the church is a shalom mission. And in particular, it's concerned with the most marginalized in society, the most disenfranchised, the poorest, those who don't have power for themselves. And in Jewish society, especially in the agricultural society, but even as it went into a more urban existence, it was the widows, the orphans, and those who were coming out strangers, foreigners, who really test what shalom is about. Walter Brueggemann says it this way, that persistent vision of joy, well-being, harmony, and prosperity is not captured in any single word or idea expressed in the Bible, a cluster of words, and then he names a number of them you can see there. Shalom is the substance of the biblical vision of one community embracing all creation. It's communal harmony and joyous and effective. We talk about shalom as peace, of course. But that's a very, peace, just the absence of conflict, is a very anemic understanding of what shalom is about. But I would say, my friend Terry McGonigal says it this way, the way God designed the universe to be. Here's some of the characteristics of shalom. Peace, security, restoration of creation, prosperity, respect, justice, truth, acceptance, restitution, reparation, equity, integrity, intimacy, growth, well-being, restored relationships, and a place where God's in charge. But it's always tested on the margins. It's always about, do the poorest, do the most disenfranchised, do those with no voice, are they empowered? Are they hungry? Are they fed? That's where shalom is tested. The prophets talk about it like this. Beat your swords into plowshares. There won't be any more war. Everybody eats under their own vine and fig tree. The wolf will live with the lamb. And so they paint an image for us. But here's, I used to understand this passage as my flaming evangelist days, right? As going out and winning that lost sheep, right? Finding that lost coin, finding that lost son. And as far as the West was concerned, as far as the evangelical church was concerned, for me, that was my job, and that was where the story ended. They didn't understand the background to the story. They didn't understand that we all have a context. In a homogeneous society, that's difficult to accept, that there are other people with other worldviews and other ways of doing things, other cultures. And they didn't tell me that. I had to find out on my own. And what I found out was that something else all the stories had in common was that not only were lost people coming in the fold, but lost people were coming in a party. That community was being formed. That there was something bigger, and it had to do everything to do with shalom. And so every one of these stories, of course, when I began to look at it with my more indigenous eyes and understand my own indigenous community and what we have to offer the world, it made sense. That's right. We have people who are lost. We have people who are outside the community. And what is the job? To bring them in the community. And that's exactly what it meant in Jesus' day. So he says, you would call your friends and neighbors together and rejoice with you because your lost sheep was found. And when she gets this coin, she calls her friends and neighbors to rejoice with her because she found her lost coin. And when Jesus talks about the lost son, and there are two lost sons in the story, but when he talks about the first lost son, he's talking to the second one, and he says, we're throwing a party. Come be a part of this community. And that kind of a party would have meant the whole community. They killed the fatted calf. And so they're all coming back to something. So if you notice, Jesus is trying to teach them something. And he tells them three stories. It's very rare that he tells three stories in a row like this. The first one, the lost sheep. It's about a shepherd, a foreigner. The second one, a lost coin. It's about a widowed woman. The third one, about a self-made orphan. Jesus is trying to tell them, you are not part of the shalom community. You're actually causing division in what God has planned here. And if you think of the stories, it was very much concerned about that holy triad. It was a shepherd or a foreigner. It was about a woman. And it was about a self-made orphan. Now the Pharisees, as Jesus was leading them down the primrose path to teach them a lesson, they couldn't imagine themselves being a foreigner, right? I mean, that's beneath them. Then a woman, they couldn't imagine themselves being a woman. So they're pretty offended up to this point. And of course, they knew they weren't the lost son because they're the ones who were found. But when Jesus starts talking about that father, all of a sudden I think the Pharisees might have stretched it. Even though they had every right to hold it against that lost son, here's this father. And this father's looking daily. This father's watching for the son to return. I've been that father. And my father has been that father. And my mother's been that father. And I've been that father now that I have four kids, watching the clock. Waiting, watching, and as soon as that son is a long way off, right, what's it say? The father goes running to the son and then embraces him and hugs him and puts a ring and does all this stuff. And the son's got this speech ready, right? And this is what I call the speech of the Pharisees. The son has this speech that says, you know, I've sinned, Father, I've sinned against you and against God, and, you know, make me as one of your servants. But you know the interesting thing in that story? It says, the father did not listen to him. Because the father didn't care about his rules. He didn't care about his reasons. All he cared about was that his son was coming home. So the Pharisees are thinking to themselves, I could be that father. Maybe I could be that father. I can't be the foreigner. I can't be the widow. And I can't be the orphan. But maybe I could be that father. And then Jesus turns the story around. Well, what is the context? The context is that notorious sinners often came to listen to Jesus teach. Well, there's the first thing the church has done wrong, right? We don't get notorious sinners coming to listen to us too often, right? But this made the Pharisees and teachers of the religious law complain that he was associating with such despicable people and even eating with them. The Pharisees fed the poor. You know, it wasn't a matter of giving to the poor. The Pharisees fed the poor. That was part of their job. But the Pharisees didn't eat with the poor. They didn't lower themselves to be equal with the poor. They didn't see themselves as a human being just like the poor. They were somehow above that. And so Jesus talks then this in the story about an older son. And the older son is outside the party. And the older son won't come in. And all of a sudden the Pharisees realize, we're the older son. We're the older son. The other thing that is going on here at the same time in this story is about hospitality, which is very much a part of Shalom. And I'll talk about that more this afternoon. But here you have Jesus. He's interesting. He goes from 1 to 100. Then he goes from 1 to 10. And then he goes from 1 to 2, one of two sons. It's very much reminiscent of Abraham in the Old Testament, bargaining with God about saving Sodom. Sodom's sin being inhospitality because they refused to entertain strangers. Why is that such a terrible thing? Well, in nomadic days, if you did that, someone could die. In our old Indian days, if you didn't offer to feed someone, they died. They might die. So you, in our Indian way, my dad told me once that when you give someone a meal, you're extending their life by another day. So it's important. And Jesus is talking about hospitality in this. So, there is a church because there is mission. We call that the Missio Dei, right? The church is merely participating in the mission of God. But if the church is not busy making shalom, then it has no mission. So the goal of Christianity then is not loving God and finding lost people. It's finding lost people and loving them because we love God, or maybe even a better way to say it, it's bringing lost people into God's shalom community. What are we doing about that community? Is it a party when people come back into it? God is presented by Jesus as a very vulnerable God. In fact, if love is means vulnerability, then God must be the most vulnerable being in the whole universe. Shalom is structuring that daily love in people's context. I know I'm out of time, but the clock's wrong. If you look, I think I have another hour. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for inviting me, for being here. This is just an introduction to the subject, and I hope you'll come out for some of the later talks. Thank you.
So the opportunity for some feedback and conversation is right now, right here in front, or the books are available in the foyer. Also, there's a flyer out there advertising the master's program that Dr. Woodley leads. It's an intercultural master's program in intercultural studies. And you said it's the only one you're aware of. Created by indigenous people and indigenous Christian perspectives, you might say, or indigenous perspective on Christian. Anyway, you get the idea. 4 p.m. This is the TGIW. It's often faculty and staff only who are coming to this Wednesday at 4 program. It's open to everyone. Common Grounds Coffee House, free coffee, free snacks. And you'll hear a more academically robust paper on the same subject at 4, with then conversation afterward, Q&A. Tomorrow's chapel at 11 is the same theme with deeper theological underpinnings. So we invite you to all of those spaces. If you'd like to join us for lunch, we'll be in the cafeteria today at noon. Just come find us at the round table. One of the round tables. Go in peace. the fullness of shalom.